He's just going to completely ice me if I start on the table.
This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Welcome. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. Thanks for joining us. This is, it's a good week. Let me tell you. So it's been raining a lot where I am, and I've been using this opportunity, you know, since we're inside anyway, also, but double W, to paint the Silent King, which I complained a little bit about last week.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd call it a complaint. I think it was more of you were in awe of its design, and you're just having to catch up with it.
Well, I've passed that awkward phase of trying to glue those stairs together, and I've gone into the awkward phase of making the big spire line up appropriately with the dangly bits under it.
Mm-hmm. And that is the technical term. If anybody asks about, you know, the undercarriage of the Silent King, is definitely his dangly bits.
Yeah, how's that going?
I'm not even to the Silent King yet. So I actually have. I've got the whole chassis assembled and painted, and now I treated it as is everything as separate models. So you can conceivably build the part with the engines and the steps and the glowy bits as its own thing. You can then conceivably build the normal Necron spire things and the what looks like the amps, the speakers.
Mm-hmm. Amps, yeah, I like that.
That's what I thought. It looks like amps. I'm looking at it right now. You can build that as one section, and then I left off the Satan, the thing that's holding the Satan in the trap. And I posted this on Instagram, and I was like, "All the power, unlimited power of the universe, itty bitty living space."
Yep, they got it.
Maybe think about that. And I treated that like a separate model, and I'm going to treat the three characters as separate models because I think this thing does just kind of beg you to really not skip any steps. And if when you're looking at the whole big model, it's a giant model with all these little nooks and crannies and things to do and stuff. And I kind of saw myself maybe taking the easy way out and not doing all the right edge highlights, not doing the fades, not doing the glowy effects or whatever, unless I treated it like several separate models. Mm-hmm. So tricking myself into trying something new.
I'm with you. That's exactly like I was saying last time, subcomponents, breaking it down. It's just so much more digestible, and you just like you said right there, you don't want to rush through it. You want to make sure you give all of it the attention it deserves.
Yeah,
when are you ever going to buy a second Silent King to paint in a different way? You got to get this one right, guys.
And I think that we can get overwhelmed and intimidated by things. And I mean, and this is no exception, even with it, you know, being in separate parts, because there are cool parts. But anyway, I'm happy with how it's going. Yeah, check out Twitter and Instagram and let me know what you think.
I was looking at you post up a picture, and I was like, instantly, I was like, that's the Mefrit colors, yeah?
It is.
What drew you to Mefrit? You just like that color palette?
So with this is not for me, it's for a buddy. So
of course.
Yeah. But when I was hanging out at a tournament, I was walking past some Necrons and I saw this really cool color scheme on the table. And I'm like, yo, that is a really cool color scheme. How did you do it? What made you think of that? Because I didn't know it was Mefrit. He's like, no, yep. I'm pretty sure this is the Mefrit color scheme. And this is before like the Necron Codex had come out. So this like it was in one picture in one codex somewhere of this might be Mefrit. And so when my buddy was like, yeah, I want to get back into Warhammer, I'm like, you should consider Mefrit because I think I can do something cool with that color scheme.
Nice. Yeah, easy as that. Yeah. Is it Castellan Green is the green?
Death World Forest.
Okay. Yep.
So I use Death World Forest. I shade it, only the recesses, not an all over wash with Athonian Camo Shade. I know you guys have never heard of that before, but I'm here to tell you. And then I highlight it. Now, look, don't take this from me. Like, there's better people with better recipes out there, I'm sure. But I highlight it with Ogryn Camo.
Yep.
And I'm pretty happy with it.
That sounds about right. Ogryn Camo is that, I don't want to say a pukey green, but it's that kind of weirdy, yellowy green.
I'd call it like a lighter, almost like a loam green.
It is. It's a very yellowy green, greenish. And I use it to paint a accent color, like what a really pale yellow checkerboard on my AdMech stuff. Whenever I do that,
yeah, nice. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's got a lot of. It's one of those colors that you just don't think. You know how we say, you know, use bone to highlight green. You don't think of it. You don't think of this color as something you could do anything with other than what it says. Camo up Smogrin with it.
How much of a game changer are those little little nuggets? It's so crazy when you hear about those things. Like the bone on green for highlighting orcs, which just broke my brain.
It's a game changer. What? I mean, yeah, it gives you a little bit of organic looking feel to it. You get exactly what you want in your mind, I think, which is what us without talent, without innate talent, struggle to get on the miniature. So anyway, Ogryn camo, check it out. Great for highlighting Death Roll Forest and like a real pale, like a color that makes you think, I don't recognize, I don't know where that's coming from, but it looks neat.
Nice.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of new codexes come out, haven't we?
Yes. I want to say the glowy effect on the orange, try it. You never know when you might get what you like, and plenty of ways.
I found like glow effects in OSL is really a personal preference. I don't think anything is as divisive as people saying whether or not they should or shouldn't use OSL or kind of lighting effects on miniatures. And some people say it's abhorrent and they hate it to it with a burning passion of a Nefrit shackled sun or whatever it is. But other people are like, I swear by it. They're like, I can't do a model without some form of OS of lighting on it anymore. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think there's some models that it just doesn't make sense on. Like I paint a guard tank, yeah, maybe a tiny little bit on the lights. Anything else? Like, what's this guy? He's got like spinners on his rims, and they're like, you know, got LEDs in them. Nah, chill.
Yep. Well, thanks for indulging in the hobby talk in the early part of the show. We normally save that, but this model has consumed my time between times. And anyway, I'm digging it. I am digging it. Pretty proud of how it's going. And I really want to make the characters like blingy. I've saved them for last. Well, I mean, because you build them in that order, but I'm going to make them stand out even amongst the Necron lords in his army.
Nice.
And you just using a little bit more tricks, a little more accent colors and stuff. I think it's going to be good. We'll see. Leave it up to y'all's opinion. Now, but don't forget that this thing has dangly bits.
Never forget.
But yeah, you were talking about Death Watch. Let's actually talk about some Death Watch if y'all are okay with that. Death Watch,
yeah.
I think it's easy to forget that these guys as a faction have been around for, I think, third edition.
Yeah, I can't confirm whether it's third edition, but I got a feeling they got the first mention of a kill team, of a Xenos kill team, was somewhere around third edition.
I think in a White Dwarf. And that eventually came out in like a White Dwarf compendium thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm almost positive it was third edition is their first mention.
Someone in the comments will tell us for sure.
Yeah.
And they'll probably even give us the White Dwarf number.
Yeah.
It was a White Dwarf 100 and yeah.
But there is the idea of Marine chapters sending, you know, they're all-stars, like an all-star baseball team off to do something. And so you can show up, you can have a squad of, you know, one White Scar, one Rainbow Warrior, one Imperial Fist, one, you know, just any of the myriad of chapters, and they could still be wearing their gear, but they're united by this really ornate and sweet looking shoulder pad.
What was the fluff reason for uniting them like that? I mean, why make these kill teams? Why not just send the actual chapter or the Legion to take care of them?
I could be wrong, but I think it was when, like, you know, specific threats that needed a specific skill set.
An amalgamation of skill sets rather than just a specific one single thing.
Like, well, this is where I would love to walk in, or I'd love to like low key enter in the intro to the A team. but the only thing I can think of is where you're in trouble, where they're on the double, and that's like not the A team.
No, it's not.
I think that's Team Rocket.
It is. Blasting off again.
I think so when you consider it, like, I admit, you know, I was familiar with them, but I don't think I really, if you remember the Dawn of War games and the kind of advanced, one of the characters, actually the scout sergeant that was in that, like he was in part of the Xenos hunter, because he came back, and so he was aware of like orcs and Tyranids and all that. So I think there's something to that going into a kill team, getting that experience and then coming back. And we don't see that as much in the Primaris era now. I think that it's still there. We just don't talk about it as much. But, you know, the training path of Space Marines, it used to be this really drawn out thing, right? Like they'd go from being scouts to devastators to assault Marines to tactical Marines. And then, you know, and somewhere in there, this kill team thing may or may not have happened. And so you kind of see that. It's really cool because, you know, we talk about it with Cassius, right? Being a chaplain and then going to kill team and then coming back and whatnot.
And getting half his face ripped off by a gene stealer one day on McCrag.
Yep.
Good times.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
No. I mean, but that's the thing, though, right? Is that like the veterans of the Ultramarines that got to experience fighting the Tyranids? Like, what perfect? What else? Who else are you going to bring into the kill teams that has Tyranid experience? Who better, right? Like, so it's really cool model of rotating in people and rotating them out, a broadening environment, you might say.
Yeah, well said. My first exposure to them was the Artemis Inquisitor model, the 50, was it 58 mil? What is it? It was 54 mil?
The Inquisitor model? Game is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Right. Man, that model, like, it took my imagination. I never ended up buying it because I couldn't justify it at the time. I was a kid, didn't have the money. But yeah, I remember being captivated by the scale of that model and just how detailed and cool it looked. I'm really just so happy that they kept that aesthetic on the new one. But which chapter is that guy actually from? I can't actually remember what chapter Artemis is from. Because I know Cassius is an Ultramarines.
Yeah, the Librarian. Well, see, okay, so all those, that Inquisitor games, actually, some of those models are really cool. Like, there's an Eldar Ranger. There's, yeah, some cult, not cultist, but alkalites and that kind of stuff. It's pretty sweet. That game did not get a lot of traction in my area, though. So I never played, but I'm sure I've owned at least one of the figures along the way.
Almost guaranteed, mate.
But when they put out that board game, like as far as I know, all the characters other than Cassius Artemis were invented for that game.
Mm.
So they didn't have any other lore outside of that before the Death Watch box set.
You mean the Overkill box set, Kill Team Cassius, and then what else was in there? That was the GSC that came out of that, or was it
I think that's the Harlequins.
For some reason I thought it was Harlequins as well. I was doing like, but it, yeah, didn't make sense in my brain. Wrong, though, but yeah, I think that's right.
Eldred came out with the Harlequin one. Yeah. Maybe so.
Crazy. So it was like so long ago, but it was probably like 2 years or something.
Yeah, I don't know what chapter he was from, though.
Someone will tell us. Yeah. I could look it up now, but I'd rather someone in the comments tell us.
Yeah, fair enough. So, it was really, it is cool that they took that miniature and then just threw it right in there and with the same war gear. Didn't change a thing. Yeah, I dig it. But just the idea. So when the lore was still very much fluid and stuff back in the day, you know, but you were bound by, there were no allies back then. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So there was no way to get anything that didn't look like your army into your army back then.
Mm. But the most you could do, could you still do it an assassin back then? You could still have like one specific assassin back in like the third and fourth edition days, or they didn't even come out yet.
No, I'm pretty sure they had come out around the same time as this. They might have been months apart, you know.
Yeah.
But that was it. You couldn't, that was the extent of your differentiating your color scheme. But these opened it up because you could have, oh look, this is an Ultramarine guy. I got to use this one rando shoulder pad that I had in my bits box that has a U on it.
And we saw that kind of with the GW expanding on the, because originally like we had the, was it the four or five chapters? It was literally just like Smurfs, Imperial Fists, the founding chapters.
The successes weren't very
well fleshed out, with the exception of maybe Black Templars. Black Templars have been around forever.
Yeah, and you could do your homegrown stuff with the regular Marine books, but they're like the Iron Hands and the White Scars and that kind of stuff were not Salamanders. You know, they weren't as a core part of the game as
they weren't a fleshed out element now. Because now they're like a mainstay. You couldn't imagine a world that didn't have White Scars in it anymore. Yeah. They're like just as much as a part of the ethos and the gameplay as like Eldar are.
Artemis is from the Mortifactors.
Oh,
there
man.
You go. No wonder I don't know. No wonder I couldn't remember what it was. I've never heard of him. Nah.
He hails from Posel, the former homeward world of the Mortifactors.
There you go. Interesting.
He's a born warrior.
Are we all?
Yeah.
this new codex is interesting. Is this the second or third Death Watch codex? Because I don't believe they got a codex before. Was it 7th edition they got their first codex?
Yeah,
was
this eighth? Is third. This is the third.
Okay, yeah. So they got a 7th edition one, they got an 8th edition one, and now they've got their 9th edition supplement.
I think 8th had, did they have Primaris or just Intercessors in there?
They did not.
They didn't have kill teams for them. You could take a unit of Intercessors. You could take, pretty much. You just have the basic units. So you couldn't mix them up at that point, at least to my knowledge.
Now you mix.
Oh my.
Keep on mixing.
Spicy days ahead. I've looked through this thing cover to cover now, and I think it's a very good book. I think this codex might be, a bit of a game changer. And not that Space Marines needed another game changer, but people are going to need to know what these guys do.
Do you really think that, though? Do you think it's not just gimmicky? Because that's what it's been so far, gimmicky.
So you think about what Eldar is, yeah? So I made a big sweeping, a ring-a-ding Adam big sweeping statement during the last book, last Deathwatch book, saying that Deathwatch is what you get when you give a Space Marine faction an Eldar toolbox of stratagems and special rules. And I think that's holding true a lot more for them now than it was when I initially said it. Even though I still back what I said then, that they're a very toolboxy, combo-based faction that is very strong in the right hands. I still think they're somewhere around there, but I feel like they've gone up another notch in power because they're attached to a truly fleshed out Space Marines Codex rather than being a part player with only a handful of things to pick from. Mm-hmm. Like before, it was okay, here's your single kill team, and you can take between one and five of these, and that'll be your 2,000 points. And then you're, you know, between one and three HQs, and most likely you'll be taking a complementary allied. I played Deathwatch for about five or six events towards the end of 8th edition, and I took them with Blood Angels pretty much every time because they complemented each other so well. You definitely do not need to ally these guys with anything anymore because I think they're truly fleshed out now. Like they feel like they have the options to roll with punches and stay strong. They have kill teams that can actually be built both thematically and powerfully while still like retaining all the flavor that you'd want if you were playing for even on an ultra competitive level. Any Deathwatch list you make is going to be thematic. And I think that is really cool.
I like also that, so there's a way that once you build your squads, you build your army out or whatever, then you can give a kill team a specialism that gives it extra rules over and above what it normally has. You got to pay for it though. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, it seems to be like everyone's going to get their pre-game upgrade purchase selection now. Funny enough though, Deathwatch have two, and we haven't seen any of the other truly new supplements yet. I mean, I haven't looked into Space Wolves enough to see if they've got something similar, but Deathwatch can upgrade they can't upgrade to a chapter master because they have watchmasters, but they can certainly upgrade to get special super apothecaries, super ancients, things of that ilk. But they can also pay extra points on top to get these to specialize their kill teams. Have you got it open there? Because you can specialize them. I think it's based on the
battlefield role. Yeah, that's kind of you can specialize against specific battlefield roles. Like for instance, fast attack and flyers, you can pick you can give them the kill team specialism Venator for 25 points, and they get some bonus rules against flyers and fast attack slots.
Yeah, they get the real ones to me. They essentially get a lieutenant for the entire game versus that slot. But where that gets spicy is that if you've already chosen that as your chapter tactic, because your chapter tactic is you choose, you write down on your list or whatnot, and you write down or you choose which one of those at the start, you know, pre-game or pre-event of you want to have specialization against for your entire army, who you want to get innate lieutenant buff, reroll once to wound. But if you upgrade them to that one, like let's say you've chosen elites and then you give them the elite upgrade, they'll get all rerolls to wound against elites for that squad, which can be really powerful. And I think like the more information you know about the matchups you're going to come into, I'm not saying this is like, please don't use this as an excuse to toolbox against your mate that you play in the garage once every month and give him a really bad time or her. But this is something that you can do. Like if you're going and playing tournaments and you go into events and you feel like there's this one army that is full of this one unit that really, really just slaps you about, say like Eradicators. You got a couple of guys in your meta that really slap you around with Eradicators. You're like, cool, I'm going to take this Eradicated killing unit and it's not going to be a problem for me as much anymore. I think that's really, really exciting.
Elite seems like a kind of a no-brainer choice, though. I mean, like that we are somewhat relying upon them.
Yeah, well, it seems like elites, everyone has a powerful elite choice. I mean, Necrons especially have so many powerful elite choices and fast attack
which
choices.
Which is good. I mean, I prefer to see that power in the elite slot. I mean, that's what the name implies, and it's nice that there's, you know, I feel like the slot is doing what it's supposed to do, where it's kind of taking a break for the last couple of editions.
Yeah, that's well said. Because seventh edition, what elite choice did you take? What, your Sangard was probably it, mate.
Maybe so. But see now, Dreadnoughts. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot. There's
we know Dreadnoughts are going to, people are going to be taking the crap out of those.
Absolutely. I mean, I've just finished building my third Redemptor Dreadnought. So yeah. I owned exactly zero before that codex, and now I own three. So there you go.
I had one and I painted it Ultramarines blue for a friend. Yeah, like, oh, crap. I've made a mistake.
I remember seeing them throughout some of 8th. In fact, they really caught folks off guard with some of the stuff that they came in with. I mean, you think about it, those, I can't remember the name, you know, the mini Marines have those, not heavy bolters, but the guns that are like
the frag cannons. Blend.
Yeah, the frag cannons, that's it. And so, you know, so people would show up with 3 squads of the Death Watch veterans. You know, they'd have a mix of the frag cannons, they'd have the storm shields, they'd have storm bolters. I mean, just a real amalgamation of different weaponry that really could just, I mean, honestly, it caught people off guard. I watched, I know my poor brother running a whole army of plague bearers just got cleaned off by Death Watch just going in there. The volume of fire that they're able to put out and their special ammunition. And so, you know, that was 8th edition. I know that's gone down some to a certain degree, but there's still a lot of good stuff to it. I mean, even for the Necrons, you know, we was looking at an article earlier today from another content producer on the survivability of Necron warriors, which I've talked about in some length already. And they really are really durable, but I do think the veteran, the Death Watch having that stratagem still that reduces Necron reanimation protocol rolls by 1 is huge. That's just such a big deal.
It really is. And I do love that they retained all that flavor. Like, they've still got a specialist, essentially a specialist stratagem for each and every Xenos faction. So, yeah. You can still remove all the Markalites against Tau. You can make Orcs get mines to their charges on Overwatch, which, you know, used to be incredibly reliable when you had, you know, 37 bolter shots with rerolls to hit from a Watchmaster on the Overwatch. Usually I'd just be like, oh, you've got a 9-inch charge? I killed 8 guys. You can't roll the charge.
So, yeah, exactly.
And then you're left there just waiting for me to shoot you dead next turn.
I expected that if something like this specialism was going to exist, that it would have been a stratagem. I think it's interesting that you get the option of paying points for it. So, I mean, it's almost like a bet. But aren't you kind of like making a bet when you make your army list anyway, that you're going to have the right tools?
Yeah. And look, 25 points to essentially fix up a problem matchup, I think, is a bargain in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but it frees up the CPs, the fact that it's not, to do more of these little tricks and stuff that you're talking about. I mean, that is going to be some really superpower stuff on these already kind of efficient Marine units.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what Red said. They were an amalgamation of good choices. Pricey, like, I mean, a kill team would always run you quite a lot of points. But it was just an amalgamation of good choices, like storm bolters with special issue ammo, a bunch of Terminators, a bunch of storm shields. It was just good. And I feel like it's in a very similar place now. The new Primaris kill teams are just good. They're an amalgamation of good choices. And I feel like they're just going to be stronger than some of their parts, which I'm excited to see. They're going to be very expensive. Like the Primaris kill team, Indomina or whatever it's called, it will literally run you close to 400 points if you want to go to the full extent with it.
I've definitely fallen victim to underestimating a kill team in 8th edition.
Yeah,
you know, me too, where because people, it became a fashion to include some people in. I never thought, like, I didn't see those lists winning a lot of events, but they were. A subset of the gatekeeper list of into themselves.
Yeah, and they just like I think they will now. They have a, you know, so you look at some armies, yeah, like untying a knot. If you are able to untie the knot, all their synergies fall apart very quickly. Death Watch have a similar thing to that, but the fact is most of their synergies are inbuilt into the squads. The squad is bringing the synergy. It's not special characters, it's not stratagems. They are innately powerful without any support. And I think that's where a lot of learning needs to come in for people. When you look at these things, you can't look at, okay, if I just kill the Watchmaster, their efficiency won't be there. No, their efficiency is still going to be there. They're still going to be terrifying. Yeah, so it's going to be a very interesting set of issues for people to come to terms with all over again, because it's on new models. I mean, you want to talk about good units. Like, we talk about Inceptors and Eradicators being two of the best units in the current Space Marine range and the current Space Marine book. The fact is, you can give those guys five heavy intercessors worth of ablative wounds now. You know, take 5 heavy intercessors, which is what you've got to start with the Gravis kill team, and then you've got 15 toughness 5 ablative wounds for your 5 Eradicators, 5 Inceptors, which is the issue there, because a lot of the time you can't deploy them on the table because you're like, oh, cool, he's got one of those freaking payload Manticores. It's just going to completely ice me if I start on the table. But then you're like, oh, cool, I'll, you know, that first payload's going, first full payload's going to go in, and you're going to kill possibly 4 out of 5 of the guys I didn't care about anyway.
Yeah, just put all this booty on the table, and you got
on the table.
None of the other good stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I love that term, booty on the table, guys.
Oh, yeah, that's rough. Yeah, and then so another thing that in hate. Army ability, though, is the manipulation of the doctrines. So
yeah, that's huge.
The Space Marine doctrines, we know they're powerful. We won't go into, you know, why they're powerful. And I mean, so far they've been like errated once or twice already, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So how powerful they are. And these guys get to do some of those old school tricks now of getting the effect of the early doctrines more than once.
Yeah, and on top of that, you get to pick and choose when they become active. So I think it says you can pick the turn in which, at the start of the battle round, you pick which doctrine is active. You can only pick Devastator once, Tactical twice, Assault 3. But what order do you see that being powerful in?
I mean, it that's the thing, right, is that it totally goes back to what you're fighting. You know, it's like if the specialisms were one thing, like you're saying in regards of meta and everything, okay, well, I'm fighting someone who's going to be, you know, in my face turn one. Maybe I start off with the assault doctrine. You know, I don't need the heavy one until later or whatnot. I mean, just that flexibility is such a big deal in being able to determine that. I mean, Necrons are locked in because you have to determine command protocols for the entire game, you know, before the first round begins. Space Marines, it's regimented. You know you're going to go Devastator, Tactical, Assault, with a little bit of flexibility of transitioning sooner than later with some of them. But with this, to just be able to say, well, I understand it's you only have so many allocations, but to be able to say, well, I'm fighting something that I want to stand back and shoot right now, so I'm going to start off with Devastator, or I know I'm going to be midfield right now, I want Tactical. And sure, you're only going to get so much of it, but that's really good, really, really good, especially with how you can load out those squads.
Let me tell you, there is so many times, you know, you playing an assault army to where I'm already in assault by turn two, sometimes turn one, you know, but most of the time turn two. And by the time the assault doctrine kicks in, I don't need it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say, I shouldn't say I don't need it anymore. I really wished I'd had it the turn before where I had more models left on the table and was in, you know what I mean? This is strong depending on what you want to do. And I like how you're limited to, you know, Devastator Doctrine only once per battle. But the fact is, the way this rule is worded, it's not turn one. So at the beginning of the battle round, you choose which doctrine is active. And so if they're holding off their junk to turn three or four or whatever, you can hold back your heavy blows from long range if necessary.
Yep.
You know, it's very strong.
So the pattern in which I already think I'd be using it is to starting Tactical when you're probably going to have the most screens that need to be cleared. Guns are going to need it. And then, like, I'm trying to say the bet, like, there's always going to be an optimal way to do this.
Yeah.
Like, there's always going to be, if you're willing to pay attention to your matchups and do a bit of forward thinking, there's always going to be an optimum way to wield this. Best way for a lot of the time is going to be not starting a Devastator Doctrine, which I think is a bit of a trap. People are like, oh, cool, but my heavy guns are going to do the most work. But if people know you're going to be wasting your heavy doctrine, they really hide away from your heavy hitters a lot.
It's so manipulable. Look. I understand, and some armies cannot hide away from it, I know you can always pay the CP, but not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody anticipates that. Some people don't respect the Devastator Doctrine, but if two equal players are playing and they're more than likely going to deny you your effectiveness of your Devastator Doctrine, which is a big
your
deal.
Your best doctrine is going to be the worst, the one they make the worst for you.
Yeah.
But where I really like it is saving Devastator Doctrine for turn two, turn three, and then deep striking heavy weapons down. You have access to Devastators now. You have full access to all the Space Marine goodness from that codex. There is a whole lot of things and heavy weapons you can put in reserve, especially being Death Watch. You can pay a CP to put any infantry or biker squad into reserve and then deep strike that down and get a premium turn out of them, probably before they die, because people don't usually let premium amazing weapons live for too many turns on the table. But I think there is a lot of power to this. Where I really like it is against things like Orcs. Yeah, Orcs, and you know, maybe things like Tyranids, if people going back to Gene Steels or Gene Steel Cult. I know these armies aren't especially great at the moment, but the one that's really good at the moment you might want to think about is Demons. Demons want to mob you very early, but obviously this is a bad example because they got invulns. But if you're blood, you know, if you want to go into Assault Doctrine turn two because you know you're going to get charged en masse turn two, that's an absolute game changer on so many levels. Like against Orcs, charging into just a bunch of intercessors that wouldn't have had rend, and all of a sudden they've got rend and just go straight through that 6+. It's a huge difference, guys. It's a huge difference to the tally at the end of the game of how many bodies they're going to have left and how much reliability they're going to have to actually score objectives and take points.
Yeah, I don't even think this is subtle. This is a powerful ability that, you know, it adds another flexibility and tacticalness to your game. And so if that's something appeals to you during the game, I think that Death Watch, you know, may be for you.
Yeah. I mean, so with the Death Watch, has anybody read any of the Death Watch books, the Death Watch novels? Because there's a bunch of them, I hear.
I've not read the novels.
What was the fluff thing you were telling us about before, Omega Vault?
Yeah, so the Death Watch, to me, like, they're cool enough as is. And I feel like, it's like, I don't read Green Lantern comics, because Green Lantern is just so cool. And I feel like if I read the comics, he might be less cool.
You'll be correct.
Than is in my mind, you know? It's kind of the way I feel about the Death Watch.
Interesting approach.
Because I've certainly I find that's the way with like most DC heroes. I'm a Marvel guy, but you know, I do like some of the DC heroes, but I can't bring myself to read them. So, but I definitely did collect, like, because you used to have to. It might have been mail order, or you got like a blister pack of the bolters and the shoulder pads.
Mm-hmm.
So they have special issue ammo, and they've got. So accessory pack that came for them was a cool looking bolter and a metal shoulder. It was metal. It was all metal. You had metal shoulder pad and a metal bolter. And I definitely built the squad. And I definitely built, you know, I remember like a White Scar guy with two lightning claws. You know, just because. Like I definitely had a unit of because again, that was the only cool thing you could put in there. But yeah, let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about the lore. The Omega Vault is pretty neat. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Howdy.
We are jamming on Death Watch. This is gimmick before, not anymore.
Yeah, they seem like I said it before, they're a pretty fleshed out faction. There's one thing, they've got a stratagem, yeah, where they can turn a unit and they get the chapter tactics of another associated unit. So you can get a Blood Angels for a turn, you can get a Blood Angels unit in your army. You can get a White Scars unit, an Ultramarines unit, you know? Like, remember Grey Shield? Do you guys remember Grey Shield from the Indominus upgrade? I mean, mm-hmm. You got that in addition to your, so for one turn of the game, if your Warlord was on the table, all the units would get X faction in addition. But now, yeah, you just pay some CP and you can turn one of these guys into a unit of whichever faction you want. So, you know, someone's tagged you in combat, Ultramarines fall back and shoot them. You've wrapped somebody and then the next turn you didn't manage to kill him, turn to White Scars, fall back and get the charge you actually wanted. You just got a bunch of bolters and you just want to go Crimson Fists or ignores cover and explodes with Imperial Fists. You got the options. I feel like that just adds, that above everything else to me adds a colossal amount of depth.
But wait, there's more.
There is so much more. What do you got?
The ability to bring in any warlord trait.
Yeah. Yep. Any faction specific warlord trait.
Any faction. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Any chapter warlord trait on top of being able to use to use the stratagem on top of it to use chapter traits. I mean, it's just, that is mind blowing in combinations.
It's phenomenally good. But we were talking a bit about fluff before. There's just, what the Omega Vault? You never actually got to it before.
So the Omega Vault, we've talked about this on the show before, but it's really cool. This is from the RPG. So, you know, there's, they did those role-playing games for Warhammer stuff, and they're actually pretty cool. The rules, kind of clunky, but at the same time, they did capture like the brutalness of the 40K world. I enjoyed them, and they had they had a couple of different levels. You could play it like the a henchman level, where you're playing guard dudes and acolytes and that kind of stuff. But then you could play as Space Marines. And there was a Death Watch book. And in the Death Watch book, they talk about the Omega Vault, which is, I couldn't point it out on a map, but I remember it being in the Jericho Reach section of the universe. If anyone knows where that is.
Sick name for a
place. I'm going to be trying to get the Soul map going up for Black Library this weekend.
But the Jericho Reach was part of the whole, like the actual Death Watch book series, right? Like that was its whole setting. It was set in that environment.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, there you go. So this Omega Vault is, I don't know if anybody knows where it was created or if it's one of those things they just found and then stuck a Death Watch symbol on it.
Yep.
Fair.
I've got a picture in my head of what it is. I'm picturing like a Watchmaster Scrooge McDucking through like just a lot of anti-Xenos tech. And I'm
hoping
that's
first
the case.
Time.
Well,
it would be the first time.
the Omega Vault, you can't get in unless it wants you in. from what I understand. So it has all these secrets, and if it ever does open for you, that like there's no way to open it without it opening for you. And if it opens for you, it leads you to whatever it is you think, or whatever it is it thinks you need to solve whatever problem you've come to it.
What was the joke before? It's the room of requirement for 40K, if anyone has a Harry Potter reference. Walk in front of the vault three times in a certain direction and think about what you want really badly, and a new pair of socks will emerge.
That's pretty much it. So, and I don't know if this, again, I'm going off of like wiki pages and shoddy memories of reading the book once, but there are a few secrets still in there that no one has no idea what is, and the origins of this thing are unclear.
Love that stuff.
Yeah.
Is there any knowledge about how it was founded? Like at what era in the, I guess the 41st millennium or 39th or whatever, when it came to be?
I don't know.
Like, how old is the Death Watch?
Yeah. Well, so if there's any clue, I just pulled up the page here. Yes, it says, above these great doors written in high Gothic, read, and the last fortress is truth.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty neat. No, I think this is one of those things shrouded in, you know, enigma, shrouded in mystery.
You know what's really cool about them? They're the only faction that says, you know what? That Thunderhammer is not enough. I need a heavy Thunderhammer.
Heavy Thunderhammer. That's right.
When a regular one just won't do, there's the faction for you.
I use that heavy Thunderhammer for everything. Every Smash Captain, every character I've ever built gets that hammer.
It's so good looking. It's so cool. It looks so tough. And I like it a lot.
So but I switched out between several. So there's that that old priest that had the real ornate hammer that looks very similar to the Dark Angel hammers now.
Yep.
So now
you mean the Maces of Absolution or whatever they are.
Yep. So if I ever have to make a special character or, you know, a cool character and he has a hammer, it's one of those. It's not Kozmatov or what, I can't remember, this Inquisitor Krakow or something, the guy that looked
Kamarazov.
No, that's the guy in the chair, right?
Yeah,
that's the guy in the chair.
That's not the one. So there was one that I guess came out around the same time that's kind of like a modern day priest, got like the big hat and everything, and then has the big hammer. Use that a lot for the firstborn Marines. I can't remember what you called them earlier.
Mini Marines.
Yeah, they're firstborn.
The far cooler thing to say, firstborn. Yeah, versus mini.
Way cooler.
The Maces of Absolution, or those now Thunderwatch, or sorry, Thunderwatch. Sounds like it could be a thing, right?
It does.
Or the Deathwatch Thunderhammers. It's mandatory to have to go on everything.
That's right. I mean, I'm a big fan. So the only Thunderhammer I wish I could get a lot of is the, what's the Blood Ravens chapter master? Mickey Rourke? What's his name?
Ooh. Angelo?
Yeah.
Gabriel
Angelo. Angelos. His Thunderhammer is sweet.
That's a sick model.
It is. It's an awesome model.
The head? It's all right.
Dude, his whole pose looks aggressive. I mean, there's just...
Exactly.
He's beefier, chunkier, and just looks like he's like going to hit you like a ton of bricks.
He could win a battle with his forehead. He'd just be like, you get Gore Daradon? Gore, the Imperial Fists.
Tor Garrodon.
You get Tor Garrodon's chin and this guy's forehead, and man, you could win any war.
I'm so glad Red is here because we have butchered some names here, and Red's like, I think no, what you mean is... Okay.
No, give me a little bit and I'll butcher the English language somehow. It's okay.
No, don't. You're the realm of sanity between me and Paul.
Well, I'll do it.
The heart
of me with a good time.
So what about the Corvus Blackstar? Because that thing, look, there are some people out there who claim that this is the best looking flyer in 40K. I'm not one of those people. I'm not trying to be thinks it's a great.
Well, if this isn't, what is? Come on. Give us your 411.
I like the Stormhawk.
Which one's the Stormhawk?
That's the one with the enclosed cockpit, weapons all over it and stuff.
Yeah, I can get with that one. I still like this one. I like this one better because my favorite movie as a child was Aliens 2.
What was the coolest
I've ever seen.
Now, maybe that's why people think it is. I think probably the coolest flyer is the Stormbird. From
Stormbird and the
SOCAR thing.
Mm.
Fire Raptor's cool, but the SOCAR Stormbird or whatever it's called is pretty epic.
On a different level, man. That thing is amazing.
I mean, we are saying coolest plastic flyer is either the Hemlock or the Stormhawk Interceptor.
Heresy, Hemlock.
I really like the Dark Eldar flyers when they first came out. this very sleek, you know, and that was before the Eldar got theirs.
Yeah, the bomber, the big one.
Mm. Yeah, and it took a while for the Void Raven to come out. I always liked the Valkyrie when it, you know, because that was one of the earlier flyers I think we had.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really, I got to say, I was really disappointed when the Space Marine Storm Raven first showed up on the scene.
Yeah.
That really, I was really disappointed.
I loved it. I think that's when actually the, I read that article or heard him talk about that everything in the Marines are shaped like a fist.
I mean, I get it. If you're a big Stripes fan and you really wanted to have the Winnebago on the table for tabletop.
Stripes is awesome. I get it. I will not allow that type of disrespect on the show.
See? See, I knew it. I knew it. I could have called that.
Mission a barrel.
Oh man.
But
yeah, so
I loved it. The arrogance, you know, and the power of the Imperium made that thing fly.
Well, and you want to know what, like, honestly, you see the movie Aliens, right? The spaceships in Aliens are also like nothing. You don't need aerodynamics in space, right? It's just not something that you really need to worry about. Like the Eldar make no sense trying to be aerodynamic with when, again, like you're in space. That's just not a requirement necessarily. However, when you do have to go planet side, it'd probably be really convenient if you weren't creating like your own like draft wall because you're just a massive brick flying through the air.
So there's some, but, there's, you got to split the difference somehow. But see, the Eldar just want style, and you could have a little style and panache.
Yeah.
I'm
that's right.
If you want the fist thing taken to its like ultimate level, it's not the Storm Raven, it's the Cestus Assault Ram.
That's
literally like if, the thing is, I love that thing so much.
That is not my favorite flyer.
We got two bricks, guys. We stuck them together and gave them just enough force to punch through a wall. There he goes. Do your thing, son. Good for you.
Oh, poor old, let's pour some out for the Cestus Assault Ram.
Yeah, it's gone, isn't it? I've got one, but it's gone. So. At least I got one.
Is that your favorite flyer, though? What is your favorite?
It's not my favorite flyer. I just love it thematically.
Are you one of these Corvus Blackstar people?
I do like the Corvus quite a bit. But I got to say, my favorite is the Punisher. Is the big boy. It is the Vulture gunship.
That's a cool flyer. But that goes back to that Valkyrie chassis, which is cool. It's so evocative of...
But it's got that sick turbine in the middle, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you know which isn't my favorite? The Arvus Lighter.
That's the OG flyer.
I know. It's freaking hilarious.
It is. I believe that is the first flyer ever made.
Really?
Yeah.
How old is that? Jeez.
100 years. Not even kidding. No sarcasm. Sarcastic. But I believe it to be one of the first flyers ever made.
Wow. There you go. Back to the... What was the original topic? Is the Corvus... We were talking about the Corvus Blackstar.
Is Corvus Blackstar any good?
Okay. So there is a stratagem in the new Death Watch book that turn one... You can make the Corvus have essentially cloud of flies from
ooh, neg one to hit.
Death Guard. No, cannot be shot.
In the first
battle round. Cannot be shot if it's the closest. Do you know why that's cool? That means you don't have to spend the CP to put off the board, and you'll actually get to use the damn thing. People won't just auto kill at turn one. So I like that a lot because I think you can pop that. Is it the start of the first battle round or is it in your command phase? Either. But popping that when you're going second is sick. So you can have it sitting on the board just in an obnoxious position, just not the closest eligible target. And you're like, ha ha, too
which
bad.
Is easy to do. Like if you're playing several flyers, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I invent anything novel, but when you're playing with flyers, you just plan what your first turn deployment is. Like I deploy this way because this gives me the mobility I need and angles I need, period. Mm. You know, every time.
It's still on the pricey side. It like comes in, it starts at 180 points and then runs up somewhere between, well, I think it's 180 and 210. So it's not overly expensive, but it still is a bit of a considerable buy-in. The issue I have with it doesn't bring that much to the board that you can't get on an infantry body. But I think it's too cool to leave at home. Like if you've got them, take them a couple of times. Have some fun. I still think it's actually decently worth taking.
Plus, still got the transport capacity. So, I mean,
exactly, yes. Yeah.
So that whole not being able to target them, you could have some high value things in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and then you can launch them across the table. I think it's probably got more play than it's ever had before. It's interesting, yeah. You get these awesome, crazy, amazing models that they come out from GW with a lot of hype and then just never catch on. Like the Gorknaut and Morknaut spring to mind as well. People thought, oh my god, we're gonna get a knight equivalent for orcs. And they came out and it was like, oh dear. I mean, they still haven't made a big impact. They're a lot more playable than I think they've probably ever been before again, but they're still not making a huge splash. Corvus is in the same realm. Amazing model. Everyone was super hyped for it when it came out. This is a cool looking thing. Oh my God, it's crazy. And then you're like, oh, it's just a bit flat.
Well, it can't hold Primaris.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a downer. But it can't hold bikes, which is like, yay. Okay. Bikes with all the bolters and the extra wounds.
Can't hold the bikes. But for one CP, you can just deep strike the bikes. And that's not too bad. And that gets around a lot of the strategic reserve restrictions, which would, for a lot of, you pay more because they're a lot of power level. But for just one CP, you can just do it instead.
Oh, no, I mean, fair enough. I'm just saying, look, the Corvus Blackstar has some options that, even though it cannot hold Primaris, I think you can still, if you felt like it, build it something into this if you wanted to field a bunch of them.
Yeah, well, I think taking one might even be good in some matchups. I'm not sure I can get behind more than one. But, start with one, see how you like it. If you're a Deathwatch player out there, if you're looking for some input. What I do like for Deathwatch is that they've essentially gotten, so a lot, I know a bunch of Deathwatch players, and their faction was so limited that their collection of the faction is very small. It's very small and consists of about 40, but somewhere between 30 and 50 guys, infantry models, a handful of bikes, handful of Terminators, and a bunch of TAC Marines or veterans or whatever you want to call them. But
they
now
they're more point efficient. Like, do they need to get more models? I mean, obviously they need to get some Primaris and stuff, but.
Well, the whole Space Marine range is open to them now. So even if they didn't have all these amazing Primaris kill teams to make, like three variants of the Primaris kill team, they've got a whole Space Marine range to pick from. And there's some awesome stuff in there for them. Like, you never had Centurions before. Never had any of the actual tanks, like Predators or the new... Did they get Repulsors? They might have gotten Repulsors. But, so many new things are open to them. They can have Storm Ravens. You can take a Storm Raven instead of a Corvus if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's definitely a big jump.
Yeah, so having a viability of, hold your hands almost together. That was their model range. And now put your hands all the way apart. That's their model range now.
They can so much just more options, not maybe it's what they just, will put on the table, but what they could put on the table.
What a wealth and depth of options is amazing for them. There's this really cool thing that you can do with the because all the kill teams are troops choices. They all get OBSEC. There's a really cool thing where a lot of other Space Marine armies are paying CP or taking upgraded ancients to get bubbles of OBSEC. Deathwatch don't need that because you could just take five heavy intercessors and five eradicators, combat squad them, and now you've got five OBSEC eradicators. Oh, you can do the same thing with outriders. You take them with all the basic blacks, you can do one thing that I really like. I'm really a big fan of Vanguard veterans at the moment, which you'll probably like hearing, Paul. I like Vanguard veterans, and I like them either with if you're Blood Angels. I'm a big advocate of just a power sword and a storm shield, or if anybody else, I like them with, of course, with a jump pack, and anybody else, I like them with two lightning claws. We talk a lot about, and I think Red's a big proponent of this, is that when you want to take someone off an objective, you want to be replacing them with a unit of yours. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to get to the trouble of clearing somebody off an objective, you want to be existing there after they're gone. So you've got this exchange of power on the table, and you haven't just shot them off, and it's just a void in the table now. It's just useless to you as well. All you're doing is trying to deny them. You're not gaining much on the return. Things like Vanguard vets, very good at that. But on top of this, the Deathwatch ones are OBSEC. So you've got five OBSEC Vanguard vets that can sling across the table, and with two lightning claws are very, very, very good at killing anything that's going to be hunkering down on an objective. Even intercessors, they'll do a great job of going through them. And having two wounds now, and now being OBSEC, you are just going to blitz them off or kill them down to a point at which you will hold it over them. I think it's a really good Deathwatch option.
Oh, nice. Did the special ammunition, does that carry over to all the various units?
That's probably one of the bigger cons that people coming from previous Death Watch codexes that folks are going to have issues with, because it is severely limited to who gets the special issue ammunition. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as big of a deal. I think if you're coming into it and you're not used to having that, you're not going to notice it as bad. But if you are, I can understand where some folks kind of like, I feel for them. Everybody that was playing everybody that was playing Death Guard with Forge World models that can no longer do it, nobody likes that. Nobody likes to have had something and then suddenly no longer be able to use it because it's invalidated. I don't think that it's as much of a concern in this regard. But, you're not giving aggressors special issue ammunition. Now, there is a stratagem that you can do it to a certain extent and you can find ways around it, but it's still very select.
I've deep dived the Deathwatch Codex now, and there's a sneaky little one in there that could be a little bit overpowered. We'll see how it comes out in the wash. But you can upgrade one sergeant to have essentially to have special issue ammunition on their bolt weapons. And centurions are now a thing for Death Watch. So you could have a Devastator Centurion Sergeant, the guy's a Hurricane Bolter, and two Heavy Bolters with special ammunition, which could get quite good. Then you can pay some CP to make that guy have Ignore's Cover and Exploding Kits because he's an Imperial Fist for that turn. And you can start rolling some combos into the stuff. This stuff gets very deep and very wide. So I'm much of the opinion that don't look at the one thing that they'd lost, which they didn't actually lose. It just got it narrowed in his application. Look at the million things that they got given because you'll just have a happier life.
There's always been like little nuggets of interesting little relic things you could swap in on those things if you wanted to really power up a vanity unit, one that you just wanted to field.
Yeah,
and that might be one of them.
Absolutely. You know, they've still got access to what I think is the two good apothecaries. This is Adam's negativity of the day. I don't think Space Marines should have a feel no pain bubble. I don't like it. I don't like that they resurrect guys so easily. I'd happily have them auto heal and then roll to see if they can get a dude back with D3 wounds or something. Auto healing at max wounds, not a fan. I think it's too good. But you know, those centurions I just talked about, you'll have eight ablative wounds for that guy who's tough as five with four wounds, and you can resurrect dudes and you can shoot them on death with banners, and you can do all these things to make it just super efficient to have your guys die. And that annoys me that they're so good at that. And Death Watch are going to make use of that as well as anybody.
Yeah, but I mean, you are limited by the number of models you have on the table because you're still paying marine points and stuff. So, I mean, it's not that bad.
It's true. I just hope Custodes get something similar because they're running into the same problems, but they don't get any feel no pains or anything. You know, it's just like it's a haves or haves nots a little bit at the moment. But the good thing is G-Dub is not slowing down their release schedule. We're slated for two more codexes this month. We're getting Death Guard and Blood Angels.
Of course,
you can't wait. As he salivates and rubs his hands together. Do you think we're going to get any more in December? I think they are. They said we're getting two more in January though. Yeah.
No, I think that's going to be it for. I mean, look, who knows? Slip in another one.
Yeah, just slip it in. But you know, they give. Was it four this month? It was four this month, yeah.
There's a boatload of stuff coming out. I mean, that's for intense. All the ranges. I mean, mm-hmm. Blood Bowl, fancy stuff coming out.
They're going to give us the usual. Yeah. We'll get the usual Christmas deluge of specialist games getting their little box or two, and then I'll probably do their. I'm interested to know if they do their big deal boxes that they've done a lot of other years. I remember they had this. Hammerfall? There was an Imperial Guard one that had three Hellhounds, three Lehman Russ Tank Commanders, and a Hellhammer. And I was like, that's the best thing I've ever seen.
I haven't seen any news of that. Although the Blood Angel Start Collecting thing coming out is, it got spoiled, you know, by whatever. But there's been folks that are disappointed. Like, yo, those aren't Blood Angel units. What on earth are you doing, GW? Well, it's kind of cool that you can paint those marine colors whatever color you want.
You're talking the combat patrol boxes.
Yeah, combat patrol box. Yeah. Those are not what I would consider the most ideal Blood Angel units.
Mm. But what's in it? You know?
If you are a marine player, well, it's got like aggressors and stuff in there. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying that, like, you could, like, I do also happen to own some painted Blood Angel aggressors, and I've fielded them in a tournament. You know? Like,
Never mind. I'll speak about aggressors some other time. I've had enough of my little bits tidbits here.
They now compete for just too much good stuff in the Blood Angel Codex, and I'm willing to bet that will continue to be the case even in revision of the Codex because there's just the BA are clogged up for points in which you want to spend your things on and what synergizes really well with the stratagems.
I mean, does BA even have a fast attack slot? They probably do. I don't know what's in it. Never heard of them. Heavy support, don't even know what's in that either. Like, it's just the troops, HQ troops elites.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
Unless you want to take Outriders. Sorry, I forgot Outriders exist.
Yeah. Outriders are good. Yeah.
They're very good.
But they kind of feel like elites anyway.
Yeah, they're elites.
So, but yeah, that's the thing. Like, when the Marines, they're getting started or start collecting or combat patrols or whatever for the Marines, like, if it just fits with what you want, pick it up. Like, if they release a box set called the specific campaign, you're not playing that campaign, you can still use those figures. Like, go for it.
Yeah, you know, I really was on the lookout for aggressors for a little bit while I was starting up my Iron Warrior Imperial Fist deal. It just so happened that one of the most cost-effective ways to go about that were the Space Wolf boxes at the time. That were intercessors and aggressors in the same box. I was definitely picking those up, and They were not being painted in gray, but in gunmetal with hazard stripes. So
that works. Awesome. We got some on the Warhammer community page. We got a little more insight into that Death Guard terrain piece.
Which
is also coming out. Looks cool. You know, so that's, I mean, it looks sort of like a Death Guard symbol, but it's like a furnace of things. And it helps them with cover and stuff. I mean,
yeah, gives light cover. And then if they're already in light cover, it makes them -1 to hit. You know, it of course, the problem with fortifications are that they are fortifications, meaning they're defensive in nature because they're only ever deployed into your, you know, like the Necron one can actually pick up and move. You know, these are obviously not going anywhere. And so it's not the end of the world by any means. There's all sorts of things you can do. Like, who doesn't mind getting cover where there was none or getting -1 to hit, right?
Control some of your fate in a competitive environment. There could be a use for that.
Yes, 100%.
It looks neat. It's going to look neat on the display board.
It'll look great. I mean, a lot of these terrain pieces or fortifications that they're bringing out are just looking fantastic. From the Necron one to the Hammerfall bunker that the Space Marines have. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. However, I really think we're gonna need to see the rest of the Death Guard Codex before I sit there and say, like, this is a must take item or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the Blood Angels will remain pretty consistent in what you take. I think that there could be a lot of flux in the Death Guard.
Yes.
I'm not hopeful for that, because, you know, whatever, just nobody likes to be changed. But there's some things I think that are, well, right now I think the Death Guard have a really strong kind of linear one build kind of thing. Bunch of dudes, you know, whatever. And that may change.
Yeah, I think the way they play is very linear. It's just, oh, cool, my guys are resilient. I'm going to leverage the resilience. They're hard. They're difficult to close in on because I have some explosive elements like the flails and demon princes and things like that. And we have some mediocre to good shooting. But you hold board really well. But yeah, I'm interested to see. I am expecting some people to get annoyed with this book when it comes out because Death Guard are in a very good place. And just like with Death Watch, people do have a perchance to, you know, focus in on the negative things, but I can't see it being bad. It's going to be good. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be flavorful. Every codex they brought out at the moment seems well thought out, well planned out. And I've got to say, the codexes I've seen so far are much better than the ones written in 8th edition. We haven't had a dud yet. I mean, of course, they're all Space Marines, unfortunately. So they're all building
they've been building up
a basis of awesomeness.
Each one has brought its own charm. And flavor. It's not just a reskin, and I like that.
When was the last time Necrons had a good codex? 5th edition?
They were pretty good going into 6th. I'd say 7th was people were kind of
7th was good for them, not because of their codex though, because of the Decurion detachment they got in this campaign book.
Yes. Yeah, the Decurion. Their
actual codex was pretty average. Sure. But and things like Tyranids. When was the last time Tyranids had a good codex? Like, I mean, yikes. Poor guys. I'm really hopeful that those lesser loved ones will get some really, really good work.
To not get too speculative on future releases or whatever, but I'll give you my feeling, my hot take on this Death Guard scenery piece is that in the game that we play right now and how scoring points and missions work, I can't see myself devoting any points to things that don't move.
Yep. Or that don't score. You can't put this is
right. It doesn't score. It's a huge deal.
Doesn't score. On top of that, though, this is weird, though. With I guess we're getting the AOS treatment. AOS every faction that came out with a terrain piece. But I always associated the Pootree with Death Guard. But I guess the Pootree is the Nurgle.
Well, it's been your de facto Nurgle thing, and it works on Nurgle stuff, and this probably will too. I mean, I don't know, but I'm willing to bet everything with a codex is going to get some kind of bespoke terrain thing. Bring on my blood cauldron or chalice or.
Well, so that means that. So what is interesting though is that Chaos have a terrain piece. They have that big star terrain piece, which is actually huge and looks incredible.
There's an Octolith crown. There's a Khorne terrain piece already.
Love it.
I have no idea what the Khorne terrain piece is.
Well, it exists.
Cool. You can't name it, but it's there. But we didn't get a Death Watch terrain piece. We haven't got a Space Wolf terrain piece. Are we going to get a Blood Angel terrain piece? Are we going
to
get a
No, I'm willing to bet that this was just like, okay, you made that? That looks cool? Yeah, let's run it.
I hope that's like, hey, boss, look at this thing. And it's like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
We're going to make that.
Yeah, somebody ran the numbers on what it would take to produce it. And they're like, yeah, we're running this thing.
We're doing it. I love that idea. I like that much better than, you know, half the factions getting a wonky terrain piece and half not.
Or they probably had it on the same time as the Feculent Narmaw.
And they're like, they flipped a coin for which one came out, which one was sitting on the shelf for another edition.
I have to bet that is not an insignificant piece of why we have this now.
Hammerfall bunker. Any guys? To me, for the same reasons that Paul just said, I'm like, it shoots. I'm annoyed. I can't put dudes inside it. It's a bunker. I can't govern. It's not going to score. It's bigger, probably bigger than I want it to be. It's a weird one. It's got some shots
because of its ability taking, you know, heavy bolters that literally shoot everything it can possibly shoot. I think there's something to that. It's not horribly overcost by any means.
It's got some shots, but I'm not taking it. But also, it doesn't fit the way I personally build armies.
For some, you know, taking Imperial Fist or whatnot, I think that there is some application, but some of that's just going to be hard to come by. And I can see where people might not be satisfied with it when you start getting into some more competitive mindsets.
There we go. We started off with some interesting hobby talk and then slowly ground us to a halt with fortifications. Guys, that's it for our show this week. Thanks for joining me. Talk to y'all soon.
Good night.
Handle the truth.